Good morning. This morning I'm going to talk about winter solstice. And winter solstice this year is on Tuesday, December 21st. And we've planned a year-end cleaning on that day in the morning after the Zazen program. And then we're going to have tea in the Zendo after that. So if you can come and join us and help clean, that would be really swell. I think it's fitting that we clean of this day. Winter solstice, as I'm sure most of you know, marks the transition between the longest night of the year to beginning. The next morning is the beginning of as the days lengthen until the next solstice. And so I think this is an auspicious time to clean and purify the Zendo for the new year. So again, please come on Tuesday morning, 6:45 is when Zazen starts. Service is at 7:25, but it takes about 10 minutes, so depending on what your schedule is for that morning. I know some of you have to go to work. Okay, so about the winter solstice. Dogen once said, on the occasion of the winter solstice, yesterday was short, today is longer. Though without edges or corners, the solstice is good to examine. I encourage you to look closely. Stop asking for the sun in the sky. So first of all, yesterday is short, today is longer. So yesterday is short obviously refers to the shortest amount of daylight, and today is longer refers to this transition from the darkest time to the beginning of the light. So I think that we don't really notice the solstices very often, or the equinox either. And what we do notice is the holidays that we celebrate this time of year, which I think for the most part are derived from solstice ceremonies. We have ceremonies such as Buddha's Enlightenment, Christmas, Shamos in Pakistan, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, etc. There are other ceremonies as well. So all of these ceremonies revolve around the idea of renewal and light. And they are, like, for example, Christmas incorporates, a lot of the symbolism of Christmas incorporates solstice imagery that was appropriated by the Christians. So I like to imagine about what it was like to live in unheated, cold buildings surrounded by fallow fields, and the days grew shorter and shorter and shorter. And perhaps food was scarcer, and you probably had been eating the same thing over and over again for several months. And to think about how joyous it would be to know that this was the longest night of the year and the beginning of this transformation towards spring, towards warmth, towards renewal. I mean, for me, brought up in a Western culture, I often think about medieval times. I think about what it was like in Western Europe during the cold months. So that's very evocative for me when I think about solstice. I also think about solstice in a way in which all the suffering that happens in the world, all the people that are going through difficulties, this is symbolic of the longest, this great suffering, in a way, of our life. This way of remembering the solstice, the winter solstice, as a way of witnessing for people, standing with people as they go through this darkest night. Dogen also said, I sympathize with clouds and water monks in this bitter, cold winter night. So these are the monks who are Zen monks. And I think about Tassajara when I think about that. Winter at Tassajara. We bundled up in literally like 4 or 5 layers of clothing. I think it's maybe cold, maybe warmer there in the Zendo now than it was when we were there in the late 80s. And of course, we always heard stories about it. And when, but from the old timers of like, and when we first started, it was, you know, of course, we trudged through the snow to go to school every day. But I think about those long winter days and nights sitting in the Zendo at Tassajara and how cold it could be, even with a space heater. And I struggled a lot with the cold. There's a way in which, you can't do this with a rokesa, but there's a way in which you can stick your arms inside your robes through the sleeve holes. And I would do that, and I'd just tense up and tense up and tense up and get just like, oh, I can't stand it, I can't stand it. And finally, one period of Zazen, I just let it all go. I just completely relaxed. And believe it or not, I was never cold after that. It was like this just stop resisting, completely stopping resisting being cold, and just relax into it. It made things so much better. I remember the times that we stood out on the Zendo porch, the Ngawa, on these little squares of remnant of carpets in our bare feet in 32-degree weather, waiting to serve Orioki meals when I was a server. And we all looked forward to the afternoon work circle when we could go outside and the sun was up and it was warmer. So that was always an exciting time of the day. We changed our clothes. We were going out to work for a few hours in the afternoon. Everybody could talk at that point. So it was kind of a joyous thing to go out and stand in the sunlight. So when I think about those days, I imagine what it would be like in Dogen's day to be a monastic in a monastery during Dogen's time. The heat would have been much more limited, and it would have been dark very early, and how the monks must have yearned for spring. And then also at the same time, winter has its own beauty. This stillness of a snowbound day. At Aheiji, where Dogen's monastery is, it's up in the northern part. It's not in the north part of Japan, but it's in the mountains in Japan. And the snow is really high. And they put up these around the covered walkways, they put up snow shields, and the snow piles up, and so they end up walking through these snow-bound passageways from one building to the next. And it still must have been very cold, still is very cold there. But this stillness of being in the snow, sitting in the Zendo together, there's a special silence in winter when you're together that way, with only the members of the practice period in the monastery. And Dogen often comments on the plum blossoms that appear in the snow. While the snow is still covering the ground, how the plum blossoms would appear on the trees, and how meaningful this was to him. And it was a symbolization of realization. It's a symbol of renewal and new birth. At another time, Dogen said, "Today's first arising is an auspicious occasion. A noble person reaches maturity." So that makes me think that he's talking about Buddha's enlightenment, which happens on December 8th. Now in South Asia and Southeast Asia and Tibet, the day that Buddha's enlightenment is celebrated is May 6th on Vaisak, which includes Buddha's birthday, his enlightenment, and also his parinirvana, entering nirvana. So they're all celebrated together. And this date is also near the summer solstice. And so perhaps there's a connection here between these. So this too is a celebration of renewal. and in recognition of what is to come. But in countries like Japan, Buddha's enlightenment is acknowledged in early December. So our Zen ancestors came from countries in the Northern Hemisphere and in China and Japan, and the winters were hard and they were cold. And after months of darkness and damp, you can imagine they were really looking forward to the spring. So in the quote that I'm talking about here, the next line is, Dogen said, "Though without edge or corners, the solstice is good to examine. Though without edges or corners, the solstice, it's good to examine it." So what does Dogen mean by without edges or corners? So by looking on the internet, I found out that even in this day and age, you can't measure the exact moment in which the transition happens. You can only measure it from the perspective of it has happened. I thought that was pretty interesting. So this is an intriguing thought. How do you experience passage in our lives? So when he says, though without edges or corners, the solstice is good to examine. So how do we examine, how do we think about how passage happens in our life? Often we know something has happened, some big event has occurred, so we can say, this happened at such and such a time and place. Like, for example, something catastrophic, like the tornadoes that just cut through Kentucky. It's like, they know something momentous happened on that night. And yet, it is a transition, but you can't see the edges of it. All the causes and conditions that come to make that come about, you can't see the beginning and the end of that. And you can't even see really what it means in your life until you look back on it. So, you don't know the impact of these things. What will happen? What transition will happen? The edges are fuzzy. They are without corners. There's a Zen expression, which is, when the donkey matter has not yet left, the horse matter arrives. When the donkey matter has not yet left, the horse matter arrives. Which means transitions don't have clear edges. Events are interdependent, they're interconnected, they're codependent. So you really can't say when one thing begins or another thing ends. This is an important point in practice, I think, because it softens our black and white thinking. We become more spacious and thoughtful about how things or people respond to particular situations. If we have this box, right, this mental box that we put our experience in, where are those fuzzy edges and corners? Where are the spacious mind that says, this is coming from something that's ancient or deep? I can let go. I can rethink this. I can have generosity because the edges are fuzzy. That's a kind of spaciousness of our mind. Now, solstice is a Latin word, and it means the sun stands still. The Latin word is solstitium. Probably not saying that correctly. Solstitium is what it looks like. And it means the sun stands still. So I looked it up on Wikipedia and various other websites trying to figure out exactly what the solstice is. And some of you may know this. So you know, the earth is tilted and it's going around the sun. And so at the tropic of, and the equator is in the middle, Tropic of Capricorn, there's a certain number of degrees of longitude above it. And then there's the Tropic of Cancer, which just goes. And so as the Earth is tilted and it goes around, the sun is dispersed in different ways, which is what causes our seasons to happen. And I never quite exactly figured out how this works, but on the Tropic of Capricorn, when the sun is hitting the Earth in a certain way, at around noon, the most intense, that's winter solstice. So I leave it to your brighter minds to go and figure out exactly how this works. So when the sun is directly overhead at the Tropic of Capricorn, that marks winter solstice. And then summer solstice happens in June over the Tropic, Tropic of Cancer. Okay, so how do we know that the sun is directly overhead? And when it's very, very, very near that point, like, is there, can we actually measure exactly what that is? And supposedly, actually, it's not possible. There is always this part about it where the donkey has not yet left and the horse arrives. So, but we can get very near that point, but technically we can't. But in our imagination, there is still this place called the still point in which everything momentarily stops. So that's something, this still point is the meaning of the word solstice. So this too is an interesting thing to examine. In Zen, I would say that each moment is a still point in the process of change. So we're given the opportunity to experience the stillness of life by paying attention to our activity. Paying attention is a kind of mindfulness, and it's a kind of stillness in our activity, in the midst of our activity. And when we do this, we can feel as if we're at a point of stasis. But in reality, it is still process and impermanence. In sports, this moment, if you will, still point, is called being in the zone. I don't know if you've ever experienced this. So being in the zone, and it's also called flow, is a kind of continuous intimacy or flow in your activity when everything around you seems to have slowed down and you have this feeling of being able to respond in the absolute appropriate way that is called for in that moment. It can feel very very clear and timeless because our focus is completely on this moment's actualization. It feels timeless and spacious. I had this experience playing soccer when I was younger. The ball was like so, just slow motion coming to me. My hitting the ball with my foot and it going away exactly where I wanted to. It all happened in this way that time seemed to be completely slowed down, not exactly to what we're talking about here as still point, but this way of, and it comes from this intense focus on what you're doing. So I would say that if we're going to talk about still point, again, I'm kind of like touching on these things that this reminds me of when Dogen says, the edges are fuzzy, pay attention. The still point in Dogen's teaching is what he calls a Dharma position. So that's a particular time, a particular thing, a place, anything that you can name. It, in some ways, it's not real because it is completely what it is, and at the same time, it is not different from what it isn't. Dogen famously talks about this in Ganjo Koan when he says, firewood becomes ash, ash cannot become firewood again. However, we should not view ash as after and firewood is before. You should know that firewood dwells in the Dharma position of firewood and has its own before and after. Although before and after exist, past and future are cut off. You should know that firewood dwells in the Dharma position of firewood. You should know that you are dwelling in the position of who you are. You are 100% you. You are not somebody else. You have your own befores and afters. And although that is true, at the same time, in this moment, you are just who you are in this moment. You are not 5. You are not 100. You are not where you were physically an hour ago. You are here, right now, in this place, this still point, this Dharma position. Each one of these places is unique in and of itself, as are you. And at the same time, you're completely part of the totality of the universe's function. That we are completely one process of life and death. And in that way, we are not different from, and yet simultaneously, we are uniquely who we are. We are 100% firewood. So, in this moment, the beauty of this is that this is where liberation happens. In this moment, you are not caught by past and future. At least, that's what we strive for. Because often we are caught in past and future. But how do we incorporate past and future and not be caught by it? How do we respond in this moment in a way where, again, edges are fuzzy, because we can find a kind of spaciousness in our response by knowing that it's so much more. And yet it is just this in this moment, what it is right now. And that's where liberation happens. Liberation can't happen tomorrow. Liberation didn't happen yesterday. Your awakening is moment to moment to moment to moment, in concert with everything else that's happening. And that awakening is that Dharma position. That's the liberation in that moment. And who is liberated? The still point Dharma position of you is liberated, but simultaneously it is liberated with all beings being liberated with you, because you are not separate. The confluence of our relationships and our individuality that we can respond to is what is it? What is it in this moment? So it is within the context of this self and no self simultaneously that our Buddha nature comes forth, that we realize and actualize our realization. So Dogen's quote continues, and he says, the solstice is good to examine. So we kind of just did that. The solstice is good to examine. I encourage you to look closely. Stop asking for the sun. So it's important to pay attention to these moments in which we're able to find ourselves completely in accord with our situation as it arises. As Dogen says in Uji, to align oneself, to array oneself with what is happening. Maybe that calls for passivity. Maybe that calls for action. But whatever it is, this way in which we fully inhabit the moment just as it is. So this is not about intellectual understanding. if we think about it too much, then we are asking for the sun. When Dogen says, stop asking for the sun in the sky, that's that way in which we have a preconceived idea about how we want things to be. In this case, he's saying to the monks, stop looking for summer. We're in the middle of winter. This is the winter solstice, guys. It's the longest night of the year. Deal with it. Stop asking for the sun. Really, just live your life in this moment where it is right now. So, if we're always looking for something specific to happen, we're going to miss what's actually happening. So, if you have an idea about what you want to happen, and it's not happening that way, and other things are happening, you're going to miss that, the other things that are happening. Or you're going to have a negative experience in a way that you might not have if you were open to what was actually going on. We're going to miss the moment. So we could say this was the still point of response. This really, write down. So if I look closely, I can't see that moment between night and day. But if we look closely, we realize that everything is codependent upon everything else, for life, for death, for light, for dark. So when can you say, this is the moment in which the longest night cycles into the beginning of daylight becoming longer and longer? Yet, although that is true, we do take great joy in this time of renewal. It heartens us to think about this renewal. At each moment of winter solstice, we can't actually see renewal, we conceptualize renewal. There's this way in which we have faith in this renewal. It goes deeper than a kind of ideation about it. It becomes a feeling. It becomes a joyousness of looking at and are turning our minds to what is active. Turning our minds to this faith. And one of the reasons we have this faith, I mean, really on a very grassroots level, is that every winter solstice, the days get longer and longer and longer. Like, that's been going on since human recorded time. And so this faith is based on a deep reality. But there's an other kind of faith, right? This faith of our lives are constantly renewing, constantly renewing. I saw this thing, I think it was on 60 Minutes on Sunday night, about a town that had been completely wiped down. And I think it was with a tornado. I don't know, 10 years ago. And they had to rebuild the whole town. And when they did it, they made everything with renewable energy. They said, okay, we're going to do, everything's going to be renewable energy. We're going to do wind energy and all of this stuff. And all these really cool things happened when they did that. And so out of this devastation came this amazing renewal from this town. I think because they were open to the possibility of change, possibility of something being different. And this, I think, is the mind of practice. Practice. The mind of practice realization. The mind that can be with those fuzzy edges. The mind that can sustain itself and respond to that still point Dharma position of just this moment of liberation, that we are given this moment, this time, this time, this time, this time, this time, today, 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 this moment, and this moment. And that's the importance of seeing the plum blossom. That's the importance of, in the middle of the winter, this blossom springs forth on a tree, outside the Zendo window, on a tree, outside your house, in a moment, when somebody says something unexpected, when somebody you don't like does something unexpectedly joyous, and we can see that, that moment, that plum blossom opening. So in Buddhism, we do Zazen to commemorate Buddha's enlightenment. This is that still point of Buddha and the morning star. We say the Buddha woke up upon seeing the morning star. Suzuki Roshi said, the Buddha woke up when he let go of everything. I think Jaco talked about this last week. He woke up when he let go of everything. He forgot everything. So this is part of this too. He didn't imagine realization. He didn't imagine his own enlightenment. He forgot all about it. He just sat with what is, what was, as he experienced it, and he let go of his idea of realization. He forgot about it, let it go. He forgot himself in that moment. In that still point of connection, he forgot the self. He completely communed with Venus, with the tree he sat under, with the people in the village who were waking up, with the sounds around him. He completely woke up to that because he was open, completely open to that moment. Something shifted and was released from darkness into light. So we commemorate this moment, his realization, and yet, again, I will remind you that it's not really one moment. It's not a person called Shakyamuni Buddha. Well, let me back up. It happened at a certain time and place, this person that we call Shakyamuni Buddha, but at the same time, we are doing, when we're sitting, what he did, but we cannot do what he did because we're doing what we're doing. So there's this way in which everything is different, and yet simultaneously everything is the same. There is this through line of connection. And there is this fuzziness, interconnection, going out, going out, going out, coming in, coming in, coming in. And yet, what we wake up to is exactly the same thing that Shakyamuni Buddha woke up to. He didn't wake up to a different kind of realization. Shakyamuni Buddha did not have a different realization than the realization that we have. It's exactly the same thing. Looking closely. Yet at the same time, we can't say definitively, what it is, because it is a collaborative event. This liberation, this moment, this Dharma position, this transition, this night, this day, this solstice, this faith is collaborative. So it includes everything. Everything throughout all time and space. This moment could not happen without the totality of all time and space coming together in this moment, with everything happening. And yet simultaneously, it's just this moment. It's completely firewood. It's completely ash. It's completely you. You are the one having the experience in accord with all beings simultaneously. But it is our perception, right? We are in bodies. We are bodies. We're not in bodies. We are bodies. So this is what Dogen calls komyo, this light of awakening. All of reality's activity. This includes our own and even includes delusion. The radiant light of transformation. The radiant light of just being. The radiant light of this still point. This is the radiant light that includes everything. It's the radiance of the donkey, and it's the radiance of the horse. The donkey is not less than the horse. The horse is not better than the donkey. It is just when the donkey, you know, the donkey, the horse arrives before the donkey leaves. That's all. So the longest night becomes the shortest day. Or the day that is growing day by day as the dark recedes night by night. Both depend upon each other. Both depend upon the totality and the function of all being of the universe. And then finally, Dogen said, the solstice is good to examine. I encourage you to look closely. I've already said this line. Stop asking for the sun in the sky. So when we ask for the sun in the sky, when it is the dead of winter, we miss our lives. We miss our life that's happening in front of us right now, that is us right now. So please look closely at your life right now and attend to this life. Attend to this life. Attend to this moment. It's precious. Each breath we take is precious. Each moment we spend with each other is precious. It's unique. We will never have this moment again. It's totally 100% unique. It's always in transition. It's always in accord. So, let's keep doing this the best that we can. Thank you very much.